this afternoon's session. I just first, before we begin, as a Wadjalla on Noongar land, like to recognise the fact that we are meeting on Whadjuk Noongar land, and even though we are responsible for stewardship of this community, they have had such a long history in this area, and we want to continue to partner with them for stewardship into the future. So tonight our CEO has had to give her apologies, so we've got Mr. Paul White filling in for her this evening. And maybe Mr. Gibson, could I ask you to acknowledge your team who are here?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yes, if you look to the back there, you'll see a few young ladies. You'll know Donna from previous interactions, but we've also got Jaslyn Hopper and Emily Comber, who are our newest additions to the planning team. So we welcome them aboard.
So welcome, thank you for being here, and all three of them will be leaving us to go down to the Town Centre Master Planning workshop that's being held concurrently this evening. So thank you for joining us and for your efforts later this evening consulting with the community on the Town Centre Master Plan. So declarations of interest for myself on item 7.4, which is the repair cafe use of the youth space. I've got an impartiality interest as I'm a member of that group, and Council Hamilton, I believe, is the same. Are there any other declarations of interest? Great. Council Hamilton, just remember to fill out the form if you would, and give it to the acting CEO. There's no announcements tonight, unless one of you would like to ask a question. I would imagine there's no questions from members of the public this evening. Deputations. There was planned to be a deputation from Jeanette Madison to represent the repair cafe on item 7.4, but unfortunately Jeanette's not able to be here this evening, so she has emailed through a written deputation to all councillors, so that will be included as an attachment on the agenda for next week's council meeting. So if councillors are able to read that between now and then, that would be great. I won't read it all out this evening. So we'll move on to item 7, which is the reports. Item 7.1 is the draft amended local planning policy number 16, which relates to the control of advertisements under the local planning scheme number 10. And if I could ask Mr. Gibson to speak to this item first of all.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This report is asking Council to consider an amended local planning policy relating to signage and advertisements. Council does already have a current policy, but that's not been reviewed since 2010. This draft amended policy seeks to improve and simplify the control of signage and advertisements, and among other things includes exemption criteria for each type of advertisement. The draft policy was circulated to councillors via the bulletin, and I do note an error in the report where it states that no comments were received. We did in fact receive a comment from Councillor Hamilton, and that will be rectified during the week, so apologies for that. In any event, the draft policy has remained largely unchanged since that time, and it should be noted that the recommendation is only for Council to seek public input, and Council will have a subsequent chance to consider it in light of any submissions received.
Thank you for that. Are there any questions on this item, councillors? Councillor Quinton first.
More like a situation than a question. So I don't know if councillors remember, we were approached by a company to put flashing advertising on a Telstra phone box. And I think we all felt pretty strongly at the time that that wouldn't be something that would fit into our community on our streetscape. So I'm just wondering if that kind of advertising had been encapsulated, or what it would fall under in the new policy if it had been changed dramatically.
Does it fall under this policy or not?
Through you, Madam Mayor, if it's advertising or signage on private land, it would fall under the policy. In terms of the scenario, I would need a bit more information to know what.
So that was in the public realm on Old Perth Road.
Okay, in that case, sorry. In that case, it would not apply. It would be a local law permit that would be required. So this policy, or this draft policy, applies to development on private land.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Hamilton?
Thank you. My email centred around the roof-mounted signs and hoarding signs, so I'll just confine my questions to those. In clause 6.2 of the draft policy, it indicates approval is not required if no more than 3 signs per tenancy are installed. But I also note in clause, and that's if it complies with the conditions in clause 6.1. So I note in clause 6.1 that there's no limit to the percentage of, say, the facade of a building that can be taken up by those 3 signs. So if there's no more than 3 signs, but if those signs are the maximum and the building is small, I'm curious about the staff's ideas on that, because clearly if we have very small tenancies in the main street and they put 3 very big signs up, it could take up the whole face. And I don't think that's the intent of the policy.
Through you, Madam Mayor, no, it's not the intent of the policy. The intent of the policy is to allow for some advertising to occur, noting that it's a commercial necessity, but not allowing an over-proliferation of signage. You'll notice in the table at the back, which contains the criteria, a good number of the different signs are provided with a total area or maximum height, maximum width, some parameter that would limit that. But if there's a particular sign or type of sign, that councils have a particular concern with, it would be easy enough to amend the draft policy to effectively make them unexempt, which means people could still apply to have them, but they'd need to be considered under the guise of development application.
Thank you for that. I actually did notice that that concern would not apply to all the types of signage, because you're right, in the table there are some where that couldn't happen, but there were some others where, for instance, animated digital signs, there didn't seem to be, like, the it's got a maximum height and a maximum width, shall not exceed 3 square metres in area, but there was no relevance to the size of the building. So if it was a small building, that 3 of those could be quite extensive. So that's but the next one, the fence sign, has, it can't be more than, you know, so much of 20 metres. So so I do know that there's some in there that are fine. with the the roof signs, clearly it says that the council or the administration or the town generally would discourage roof-mounted signs. But my curiosity there is, it looks like if they fit within a certain size that they don't actually have to make an application. Is that right?
Through Madam Mayor, yes. That's as it's currently drafted. If it meets the criteria, it would be deemed exempt from the requirement to obtain valid approval. It's obviously open to council either next Tuesday or following the consultation period to change the parameters, which would make it harder to be exempt or easier to be exempt, as the case may be. If councillors have any firm views about that, I'm happy to consider that during the week. But what's been provided in the policy, it's not an exact science. We think it's a reasonably good balance between providing opportunities for signage, but not providing an excessive amount. But if council want to make it easier or harder, that can be done as well.
I think from my perspective, when I was looking at that, I wasn't entirely sure how roof signs would fit with our environment in the town. So my curiosity was whether we could actually make it so that would have to be an application made to the town rather than something that is automatically, if they fit
so
it in a certain
size. How would it be best for Council Hamilton to approach that if she was wanting to explore that?
Through Madam Mayor, if that was the only one, I can take it as stated, but if there's others, happy to receive an email.
Only one other question. The other question was the hoarding signs, and I have Donna was very generous with her time on the phone to me the other day, and we did talk about the hoarding signs. And I know from that conversation that you have already reduced the maximum size down from, I think, 32 square metres down to 22 square metres as a maximum size. And I'm wondering, given the small nature of our town and the fact that we don't have as many giant, massive industrial areas like some other areas, would the staff consider that potentially we could actually reduce that down to, say, 18 square metres as a maximum.
Like I said, through you, Madam Mayor, it's not an exact science, but if it's just about where council wants to land sort of philosophically. If we want to catch a few more applications and reduce the scope of the exemptions, we can do that by reducing the maximum area.
That's it for me.
Thank you. Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just seeking clarification on some phrasing that's used. Is semaphore sign and flag sign the same thing? Or are they different things? I refer specifically to Table 1 in...
Jai, I think that's the old policy you're looking at.
Right.
No. Pick a bit, few more pages.
Page 4 of 12? You're right.
Is he? Which one?
Attachment 1. Mm-hmm. Uses the phrase semaphore sign.
I think you're looking at the old policy,
right.
So keep going and then there'll be the updated.
Yeah, and so the updated one says flag sign. Is that referring to the same thing but just with different words?
Through you, Madam Mayor, it's simply making it a bit easier. Semaphore sign is a fairly unusual term. Most people don't understand what a flag is, so we've just used flag rather than using two terms.
Yep. And just to follow up on that, so flag signs. It's 3x1. No, that's okay. That's fine.
Happy?
Thank you.
Any other questions? I just had a question about areas such as the Old Perth Road precinct, particularly the historical end, and whether there's ever any merit in considering something different for that area to try and help maintain the heritage aspect as much as possible without it becoming inundated with things that don't match that style. Is that something that's considered or done in other places? Or
It can be, and there's certainly merit in that context, and probably something best done as part of a precinct structure plan, and which at the same time you could unexempt signage in that precinct,
mm-hmm.
put more bespoke specific provisions in the precinct structure plan as the alternative control. So yes, it's got merit, but it would be attached to a different process.
And that would be something that would come later down the track through our planning.
Correct.
Great, thank you. Councillor Wilson?
Thank you. Just one last question. So with the projection signs, presumably that's projecting an image onto a wall or a building, is that...?
Through you, Madam Mayor, yes, that's correct.
Okay. If there was some sort of artistic installation that was projecting things onto buildings, is it possible that it would fall under this? Or is it specifically for advertisements that are selling a good or service?
Correct. Through you, Madam Mayor, the latter. If it was an art installation, it was not involved in any commercial enterprise, it would be a form of public art. If it was offering us goods or services or promoting a company, that would be signage.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you for that. We'll move on to item 7.2, which is the review of the Responsible Cat Ownership Amendment Local Law of 2006. Is this you again, Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This report is asking Council to consider a new local law relating to cats. Council does have a current local law, but it has not been reviewed since 2006, and the legislation and regulation relating to cats has changed significantly in that time. The draft local law seeks to reflect current best practice, community expectations and alignment with those higher order frameworks. Of most interest, I'd suggest, would be that the draft local law establishes a cat prohibition area at Bin Dowring Park in acknowledgement of the environmental value in that location. And as with the previous report, this report is only seeking to have Council's endorsement for the purposes of advertising, and Council will get an opportunity to reconsider the matter with the benefit of seeing the public input.
May I ask, in terms of the cat prohibited area being identified as potentially the Bindarin Park, can you help me understand the rationale for identifying just that area? So you said that it's sensitive, but I would imagine there are other areas in the town that could also warrant being included.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yes, this was obviously considered in some detail, given that it's a significant shift to the status quo. Obviously, as councils would be aware, it has environmental value in its own right. Staff were mindful of the fact that it is a significant change to the current regime and did not want to select a suite of sites, so we thought it was important to introduce it incrementally, although that is up to council whether that's the way it wants to go. So mindful of the significance of the change, wanting to introduce it incrementally at one location to start with before potentially spreading to other locations, and identifying Bindarang Park as having environmental value and it being surrounded by residential property, which makes the policing invitation somewhat more practical.
So just following on from that, if there was some thinking around it potentially being an incremental process, were there other areas that staff had flagged as potentially being suitable?
Through you, Madam Mayor, there was Pickering Park and also Success Hill as other options. But again, the desire to keep it an incremental approach to start with led to Bindarang Park, but it's certainly open to council to establish other areas, and that's not too difficult to change. Obviously, the local law framework is a bit different to the local planning policies, where if you're making a significant change, you really do have to re-advertise. So if council did want to make a change, it would be recommended that council make it before consultation.
Thank you. Councillor Barty first.
Just a brief question. It's obvious, but I assume the cap prohibition area doesn't prevent people from residential areas from actually owning cats. Second of all, obviously the owners in that in those residential areas would have to be particularly vigilant on cats leaving their property, which may be a change for some residents. In addition to advertising the new policy, would there be a sort of plans for an education program moving forward?
It's through you, Madam Mayor. A few points there. So it's a local law, not a policy, just for the avoidance of any doubt. If a cat prohibition area was shown over private property, that would prohibit cats being owned on those lots. What staff recommended is it applies to the public reserve, so it won't implicate any existing cat owner, except so far as you mentioned, Councillor Barty, that they would need to be more vigilant in their cat ownership. But yes, in terms of the last question, it would be supported by an education program about responsible cat ownership.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I saw a hand over here.
So,
Councillor McWilliam?
Yes, excuse me. I may not have read the paper in complete detail, so forgive me if I should have already noticed. But is there some scheme in mind to register cats in Macedonia, in the town of Macedonia?
Through you, Madam Mayor, there's a requirement to register your cats. Yes.
There is already.
There already.
That's in the Cat Act, isn't it?
Correct.
For sterilisation, registration
and
microchipping. Councillor Hamilton and then you, Councillor
Wilson. I think Councillor Wilson was
It's okay, I called you first. You can speak.
I'm all in favour of restricting cat access to areas like Bindarang, particularly for nesting areas with ground nesting. I also... and in favour of something like that happening in Ashfield Flats, because clearly that is an area that has a great number of ground nesting birds. So my question is, fine, this policy is to
local law
limit private owned cats going into these areas, but do we have an idea of how we're going to deal with the feral cats that are breeding and are very destructive? Is there a hand-in-hand type approach to dealing with that?
So you're seeking to understand what we're currently doing and if there's any future plans?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, clearly, if you see cats, if you implement this and you see cats in the Bindarang area, what I'm trying to actually ascertain is how you're going to deal with them. Are we actually going to have rangers catching them, or what are we going to do?
Through you, Madam Mayor, that's largely a decision of council. We have obviously our current ranger staff, and there is part of those duties includes dealing with cats. We have five traps that we use throughout the entire district. As you'd imagine, at the rates cats reproduce, five traps is not doing a great deal. But if there was a desire of council to get more involved and get more proactive in the implementation of the relevant local law, be it this one or an amended one, that is able to be done, but that simply comes with increased cost. So it's a question for council how much it wants to invest in that exercise. But at the moment we do undertake some regulation. We do deal with a reasonable number of cats. A lot of them, as an aside, are not registered or microchipped, and only about 10% of them are claimed by an owner. So we do have an issue with cats, but we're not the only local government in that boat. It would be open to council to take a firmer approach if it wanted to prohibit cats in larger tracts of the district, but again, that's a decision for council.
Hold on, Councillor Wilson's been waiting to ask a question first.
Oh, thank you, Worship. So is the Cat Act like the Dog Act in that we can only make prohibited areas on council-controlled land and not on state-controlled land?
Through you, Madam Mayor, I believe it's designated an area in a local law, which could include private land.
No, I think maybe areas like the Asheville Flats that are WAPC land. Is that your question?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I would suggest that's the case. We can follow up with the department and see if they would be agreeable.
That would be really helpful.
But I would suggest, given the department has management authority of Asheville Flats, it would need to be with their consent.
Because just to follow up, I know for, say, designated dog exercise areas, for example, we're limited to only being able to declare those on land that we are responsible for managing. So if we can just get some clarity on whether the same applies for cats, that would be great.
Councillor William?
I'm just wondering if there might be an opportunity to, or a determination to have cats impounded where they're not claimed by owners, so immediately. We currently have that in place for dogs. We send dogs to the pound in South Perth, or we have done so. Is that a facility that exists currently? Are you aware?
Through you, Madam Mayor, yes, same thing happens. They go to the pound in South Perth.
Councillor Hamilton.
This is, again, following on from my previous line of questioning. There's a growing, at the moment, there is a huge issue with animals being surrendered because of the inability to get rental accommodation that will take animals. But in conjunction with that, there's also a massive number of animals being dumped in public areas, particularly parks. So my question is, do we have the ability to increase the fines if the rangers actually catch someone dumping animals in our reserves and public spaces? I can't remember how much it is at the moment. I know I read it, but I can't remember how much it is.
Through you, Madam Mayor, there's a series of prescribed offences and penalties in the draft local law, and they are all $200. It would be open to council to amend those, whether or not that would actually have a material impact.
You have to catch them
on the activity, and as I say, to actually find the offender and be able to substantiate an accusation.
Councillor Clinton.
Thank you so much. Can I just be really clear about the instrument of this cat prohibitive area? And how that's different to the general idea of the Act if we didn't impose this CPA at Bindari. Can we just get really clear about what the difference is if a cat is found, if we do impose a CPA at Bindari, as opposed to now when it doesn't? Can I just be really clear on the difference there, please?
Through you, Madam Mayor. It's not an offence under the Act for a cat to be in a public place, so long as it's microchipped and all the rest of that. So if council wants to have a firmer control on the regulation of cats, it needs to declare these areas. So I'm not sure if that answers the question. I'm happy to take a supplementary question
to clarify.
So what's the difference? How do we let the cats know? Let's assume then that the cat is sterilised, registered, and
microchipped.
Thank you. Fluffy has been having a great time at Bindarin Park, causing all sorts of trouble at the moment, and we impose this CPA and Fluffy still goes there. So tell me what the difference is between now and if we impose this CPA, given, remember, Fluffy is all of those three things.
Thank you, Councillor. Through you, Madam Mayor. It is a tool for the owners. This is about responsible cat ownership and about ensuring the cats are not allowed to go into the cat prohibited areas.
Okay, I just want to clarify, because they can't do that now, right? If they're on a private place now, if they're in a public place now and the ranger picks them up, there's still going to be that mechanism for the owner to be notified because they're going to be microchipped, and then, right? So what's the difference in the process?
It proves that it will be an offence.
Okay, thank you. Yep. So, and if it happens time and time again, they're going to keep getting
fines.
Notices.
At the moment, if the cat is located, but it's microchipped and all the rest of that, it is returned.
Okay. It's the $5,000?
It's the $200.
Sorry, $200. What did I read? $5,000?
That's the maximum.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
So the five cat traps that you indicated we're using at the moment, I imagine that's largely to control feral cat populations. Would that be correct, or...?
Through Madam Mayor, yes, broadly. But in terms of the number of feral cats, particularly in the industrial area, five cat traps doesn't cause a huge dent in the population.
Can I just ask another question a bit on a slightly different topic? So there's provision in there for members of the community who have a nuisance cat come onto their private property to report that, and that's would potentially now be an offence. I'm just interested in the process that would follow, because from reading it, I took that someone would fill out the form and there's a box to tick saying that you'd be willing to testify in court on that matter. Is that the immediate escalation if somebody makes an incident report?
Through Madam Mayor, there's a difference between a cat being a nuisance and a cat being on private property without consent. So Section 2.1 deals with the cat being a nuisance, and that gives later to the form you referred to.
Mm-hmm.
2.2 deals with the cat being on a property without consent. So if a cat is located at number 2, but goes into the backyard of number 4 without the owner's consent, that is an offence.
Yeah. But the process, once someone has reported that, what happens then?
That would be directed to the rangers, and the rangers would need to substantiate the accusation before issuing a fine.
Great, thank you.
Any further questions? Councillor McWilliam?
Just in terms of substantiation, would that require the owner of the property where the cat was trespassing to take photographs of the cat? Would that be the sort of thing that people would need to do to substantiate the wandering?
Through you, Madam Mayor, that would be the very least. Ideally, the cat would be detained and identified, but if there was sufficiently clear evidence that the offending cat was owned by a particular person, that might be enough to substantiate a fine.
Councillor Hamilton.
Has the administration considered forming a partnership with a cat rescue that might actually deal with the feral cats, rather than just having five traps and having limited staff resources to trap some of these cats? Has there been consideration of forming some sort of a partnership with some of these not-for-profit groups, charities and what have you, that actually do cat rescues and cat trapping and tend to do it on the smell of an oily rag with no money?
Through you, Madam Mayor, yes, we already do that. We have a large proportion of the cats are rehomed via that mechanism.
I meant for trapping.
To do the actual
physical trapping.
Through Madam Mayor, I'm not sure, but happy to follow up.
Yep.
That's right, certain organisation gets commission per cat.
Well, that's what they do in some areas.
Okay, if everyone has exhausted their questions, we'll move on to item 7.3, which is the fencing local law review. And again, this is Mr Gibson's item.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This one is reasonably straightforward. The report's simply asking Council to consider reviewing the local law relating to fencing. Whilst there's no issue with the current local law and it operates satisfactorily, council is required to review it every 8 years in line with the legislation, and that 8 year period will become due late this year. So I simply recommend that council advertise the draft local law for comment on the basis that we're not proposing any changes. Council, as before, will get to reconsider the matter post-consultation.
Thank you. Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Over the past few years that I've been on council, I've received a few ratepayer inquiries, and a common theme in all of those inquiries goes to the adequacy of things, and whether the fence that one neighbour is installing is adequate for the needs of the other neighbour in terms of being able to retain, seeing if there's a difference in heights or withstand nearby vehicle use. Are those sorts of issues contemplated in our local law here, or are they regulated elsewhere?
Through you, Madam Mayor, they're broadly regulated elsewhere, the Dividing Fences Act, and in terms of the sufficiency of a fence to retain soil, that wouldn't be under the fencing framework anyway, because that becomes retaining. So fencing under the Dividing Fences Act and the local law is dealing with this above ground superficial fencing dividing two properties. If it's retaining, that's a different matter entirely, and that's dealt with via the National Construction Code. In terms of vehicle adequacy, I'd probably need to see a specific example, but I can say this local law is fairly reflective of most other local governments' fencing local laws, and like I say, has been operating without a great deal of issue for some time. Obviously, it doesn't necessarily stop issues between neighbours from time to time, and that's largely unavoidable, but like I say, it's the local law is quite adequate for our purposes.
Any other questions on this one? No?
Okay, so item 7.4, this is the use of the Youth Services Centre by the Repair Cafe. Mr. Ma?
Sure. The town received a request from the Repair Cafe Bassendean to use a storage space at the Youth Centre. The group has a really good reputation in both the community and the town. The work that they do there is really a service provided for the town and its community. It meets some of its waste objectives in our corporate business plan. Their work provides a second life for goods and services that would normally end up in landfill. And the premise of this report is to take some of the pressure away from the small volunteer group in terms of the logistical tasks, moving materials around the town and so forth. Provide some storage for them and to let them focus their time on doing the good community work that they do.
So I understand that the storage area has been vacant and so there's not another purpose for it at the moment?
There's not many opportunities for its use because of where it's located in the building and so forth. It's a back storage room I understand not in use at the moment.
Other questions? Councillor Barty?
Potentially just a comment, Your Worship. I'm just wondering, as a part of this co-location, whether there's an opportunity to potentially engage some of the users of the youth centre to participate in the Repair Cafe. Potentially as an opportunity to build their skills and add some something to their resume.
Specifically, it's a question that I can ask of the group themselves in terms of that sort of mechanism. I understand that the opportunity for the group of having a little bit more of a central home is to be able to invite people into the community to be part of their Repair Cafe group.
Can I see a question from Councillor Quinton?
Yes, thank you. I'm just wondering around the process and the red tape for these kinds of requests that come to council. I know that there was a contentious issue that we had a few months ago and that needed to come to council, but is there not a mechanism we can use for some kind of delegated authority that it doesn't require the community having to wait for these kinds of things to be approved by council?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The acting CEO may want to jump in to talk about the leasing framework, but there was also the opportunity under a recalibrated sponsorship and grants program to provide a mechanism for council to effectively delegate the decision making to staff, whether it's done through the sponsorship and grants policy or whether it's done through the property leasing framework. It's an open discussion, but there will be a mechanism to make these things simpler in due course.
Great, thank you.
Okay, everyone happy to move on? Item 7.5, it's the draft policy relating to purchase and placement of memorial trees and seats. So you again, Mr. Mark? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So this is a delicate matter that arises from time to time where parks and garden staff will receive requests from family members or friends of a deceased loved one. Often this is a distressing time and sad time for the people that are contacting our staff. And what officers are looking for is some consideration from council on how officers should be responding to these situations. The request is often for a memorial, and in the community and amongst local governments, there is often some concern that the proliferation or too many memorials in a public open space area might make the place into a use that it's not normally used for. And there's also the concern around the financial costs of the local government on maintaining those memorial sites or providing them as well. In looking at what other councils are doing in this area, it's an environmental scan. We've put together a policy that's attached to this agenda item that tries to balance those concerns with the request that were by some community members as well. What we have limited this policy to is memorials being limited to a seat or a tree. Both of those are at the resident's cost, and that's the full cost of providing that service. The seat itself is at the cost of $2,500 and would be located in a public space somewhere, and the tree would be planted as part of our urban forest planting program at a cost of $300. However, there wouldn't be a specific location provided to the applicant themselves, but they would receive a memorial certificate.
Thank you. Okay, you can ask your question first. I just had two questions. So firstly, about the seats. So I understand that the location will be discussed with the CEO and that at the end of that seat's life would be removed unless the individual who requested it or who paid for it originally wanted to replace it, that would no longer be replaced at the town's expense. But the plaque itself... in this draft policy, it says that the plaque can only include the person's name, date of birth, and passing date. I'm just wondering, it seems very narrow, whether there's scope for them to make one little comment or some kind of personal message that's limited. Just noting the $2,500 is quite a significant expense for somebody, and whether there'd be any concerns from the staff about maybe expanding just slightly what people could include on their plaques.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So what was put forward here, I guess, was trying to cut out the red tape in the process so that staff weren't having to approve plaques. The applicant could just have their plaque developed up and put on a bench. And I guess what is reasonable to write on a plaque may be different for different people as well. But it's, of course, a decision of council if they'd like to provide that as well.
Great, thank you. And the other question was in relation to the trees. I appreciate the reasons why a specific tree wouldn't be identified, but I suspect that would be less satisfying for a lot of people than having a particular tree that they could go and visit. I'm just wondering what other examples you've seen in local governments about how they've approached a tree specifically, and if there are any other models that you think may have merit as well.
I haven't seen it. In terms of this sort of policy, I've seen it more around hard structures such as seats, and not necessarily around trees, although some local governments have decided that they wouldn't have any memorials allowed in their public open spaces at all. In terms of the tree, again, is that I guess what we were attempting to do with this was to keep the cost down in terms of installing the tree, is that that process of working with a resident would require some hours that would increase that particular cost.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Councillor Quinton first, and then Councillor Badger.
Thank you. Just wanting to get some... How much would we charge for the planting of a tree, a memorial tree?
So the cost under this policy, proposed under this policy at the moment is $300.
And so would this be a tree we would plant anyway?
No, this would be an additional tree as part of the tree planting program.
Would this be a tree we've already purchased as part of the tree planting program under the normal budgetary process that we've been through our tree reserve? Or is it an additional cost to us?
It will be an additional tree.
Why would we not have that tree that we purchased? Because we probably purchased those trees 6 months ago. What's the tree process we're buying trees at the moment?
As part of the next, through the mayor, as part of the next tree planting program, we will order that additional tree or trees depending on how many applications there were.
So we can't take a tree that's out of stock that we have, that we've already purchased as part of our normal tree purchasing program? I'm just trying to get really clear on...
Sure. To probably make the scenario more simple, if person A put in an application and we were planting 20 trees, as part of the next tree order that we do, we order 20 trees.
Okay. Thank you. So there isn't a mechanism where we can just take a tree from our normal purchasing of trees and give that to the person and say, here is your memorial tree.
So they're not being given the tree, though?
Yeah, not exactly.
Yeah.
That's my point. Why would we be charging for a tree that we would just be planting anyway, that we could just be planting anyway?
So I guess through the mayor again is that we don't need to do that. I guess as part of this policy... what he's proposed to do was to help increase the urban forest by an additional tree per applicant. And I guess it's just an opportunity to remember that person. But if that was the type of policy that council wanted, we could write it.
Yes,
well.
Thank you.
Councillor Ganger was first, and then you, Councillor Fleur.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just looking at the policy, there doesn't appear to be any oversight in relation to the purchasing of either the bench or the tree. So what I'm saying there, we get very many requests in, certainly during my time on council. It comes to council. Contribution to the town is certainly a key factor. I can't see anywhere in an oversight here where we can actually, or the town has sort of checks to see who we're allocating memorials to. It just seems to me, the way this is written, that it's an automatic given, despite perhaps somebody's history. So I'm just wondering, where's the oversight, where's the balance in just, or is this just simply a free-for-all?
Under this particular policy, to keep that cost down again, is that there is no checking of the person. However, what we will be looking at doing is creating a reporting framework that could be through the bulletin, or it could be as some sort of quarterly report.
Yeah. So, just a further question. Then I'm just trying to understand the logic, because obviously the plaques we have now around the town are very much of significance and has a story behind potentially the individual if they're awarded in that sense. Whereas this is basically just having families being able to register plaques at random within the town. So there's no backstory or history. Potentially with this policy.
Through the mayor, that's correct.
Councillor William first, and then yourself, Councillor Appleton.
Okay, just in terms of the earlier question from Councillor Quinton, the $300 to be spent on the trees means that they'll be a tree of some significant size, doesn't it? So rather than seedlings, we'd be actually planting a significant tree, an established tree.
Through the mayor, yes, that's correct. This would be one of our larger trees, and the cost includes both the purchase of the tree, the labour components of the policy, the certificate, and then
the other thing I wanted to perhaps suggest is that Durian Bay has a seascape pathway which has a number of benches on it that are memorial to people who passed away locally. I take Councillor Gandel's point that really they need to be people who are maybe lived in Bassendean for some time, at the very least. That's just a suggestion.
Councillor Hamilton?
Having travelled a bit and visited some areas where memorial plaques are quite common, I would ask the staff, have they considered a dedicated area for something like this? The only reason I ask is because I did, in North Queensland, visit a place which was Memorial Park. It had trees planted with plaques as memorials. It also had benches that were memorials. And it had a rose garden, which was also memorials, where the plaques were around the edging. So my question to the staff is, given trying to balance one of the comments made by the mayor that people often like to be able to go to a place to remember someone, would it be worth considering perhaps looking at a specific area which could become a memorial park to accommodate all of these things? And, you know, it might have some benefits for the town, but it also have benefits for those people who are grieving.
I guess that would be a consideration for council rather than... Yes. Councillor Quinton?
No, well, I've asked the question. Do you want to go first?
No,
you didn't have your hand up?
I did, but you've got the call.
Okay, thanks. Just a quick one. Just noticed with the memorial seat that the CEO may authorise the removal of a seat or plaque at any time. Will the family be notified if that happens?
For the mayor, yes, that would be correct.
Councillor Wilson?
Sorry, can I just rephrase that? Is the person that would be notified would be the applicant, so it would be either the family or the family.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'm just seeking to understand the staff's reasoning behind limiting the words on a memorial seat plaque to just the items listed in the policy. Was there any consideration given to allowing a wider range of words?
So that's the question that I just asked earlier, and I think the response was to reduce the administrative oversight necessary.
Yeah, cool.
Is that an accurate reflection?
Yes, that's correct.
Administrative oversight in what sense, though? I don't understand.
So through the mayor, under this policy is that the applicant will be able to order their own plaque, and there won't be a requirement for officers to check the language and so forth in the plaque, or to go through some sort of process, which reduces that administrative requirement.
Something more, Councillor Wilson?
Not for a briefing session.
Any further questions? Okay, so we'll move on then. Thank you for that. Item 7.6, the Town of Bassendean History Book. Will this be you this evening, Mr. White?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So councillors would be aware of the proposal to recall an account of historical events connected to the town stemming from a council resolution back in 2011. The project since that time has had a staggered history, as is outlined in the report for you. And the administration considers that the present manuscript is not fit for publication for the following reason. Council saw an unbiased account of historical events in the form of a readable history rather than an overly scholarly work. The manuscript, in its attempts to constitute a readable history, presents more as a social commentary that exposes the town to unnecessary risk of actions for defamation. To further edit the manuscript for publication would involve considerable further expense, with the likely consequence that the remaining content would offer limited public value beyond what is already publicly available information. Consequently, the recommendation is for council to resolve not to publish the history book.
Thank you. And just to bring council's attention to the fact that there's a confidential attachment associated with this item as well. So if there are questions related to the confidential part, we need to go behind closed doors probably at the end of the meeting. Councillor Quinton and Councillor Wilson.
Thank you. So who owns the rights to the book now?
That's would need to be the subject of a confidential discussion at the end of the meeting.
Okay, so should that confidential discussion, should someone be able to buy the rights? Can you answer that question, or again, confidential?
Through you, Madam Mayor, I don't believe so at this point in the discussion.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Worship. I'm just trying to understand the second point in the officer recommendation that says that the Town of Pleasanton does not commission any further local histories by third parties. Does that include, for example, a local history of Noongar and colonial interaction that might be able to be used by primary schools? Does it encompass anything that's history related forever after? What's the purpose there?
I might ask.
Through the chair, it would be more of a situation that we don't see ourselves in. That we see ourselves in the situation at the moment. So it would be us commissioning the work, paying for the work by a third party.
But does it automatically follow that if you have one bad experience, that you're always going to have bad experiences? I guess is what I'm trying to understand.
I think, through you, Madam Mayor, I think that's something we can look at during the week, Councillor Wilson, but I suspect the intent is to protect the town from the types of risks that we're facing in this particular situation. It certainly doesn't preclude the town conducting those activities, whereby it would control and retain ownership of the content and the process. But we can certainly come back with some more information in relation to your specific question.
Just with your indulgence, a further follow-up question. Isn't the question of content a management issue and a question of contract construction such that there is proper oversight over a body of work that's been procured?
Madam Mayor, that may well be the case, but I think given we're in 2021 and this has been going on since 2011, the view of the administration is that it essentially isn't salvageable.
In relation to the point that Councillor Wilson just raised and the second point of the officer recommendation, would passing of that recommendation mean, would it still allow Council to, say, the example provided, if we wanted to commission some work on local Noongar history that could be used as an educational resource, would we still be able to commission that and have somebody assist us with that work that had the appropriate expertise, but us be have the ownership rights and we'd be the author? I'm not sure exactly what the difference is either. Like, what would it still allow us to do in that situation?
I think, through Madam Mayor, I think the intent is of the recommendation point two is to not engage in further third party letter control works. Mm. As I said, maybe that needs to be subject of some further thought between now and next Tuesday, and we're happy to.
Did you have a question, Councillor Badger?
Thank you very much, Your Worship. Look, as somebody who has the full, very rare collectible edition of the actual book itself, or supposed book, alleged book. Yes. So, I have to say, I'm not sure what all the fuss is about personally. But I'm just wondering, in relation to the town being concerned that some parties may be offended with what's divulged in the book, have we endeavoured to seek those parties to see if they are willing to sign a waiver for what, show their portion of what is written in the book about them, get them to sign a waiver so therefore the book could be released as was produced?
Yes. So three, Madam Mayor, perhaps that might be best left for behind closed doors
discussion.
The end of the meeting.
If you can remind us of your question at that stage, that would be fantastic. Any other questions at this point? Councillor Hamilton?
Just following on from Councillor Wilson's questions regarding that part of the office recommendation, I note that there would be potential, I'll ask the staff, there would be potential to provide grant money to an entity or a writer who may want to produce something and it becomes their responsibility to publish. I bring this up because City of Bayswater have just done that with poetry and it's a grant situation. So would that be an opportunity that provides some scope per what Councillor Wilson was asking before? No? Yes? Anyone?
Three of them potentially is something we can look at.
Yep. Okay.
Any more questions for this point in the meeting? Item 7.7 then, it's minutes from the general meeting of electors, in particular the notices of motion that were passed at that meeting. Would you wish to speak on this one, Mr. White?
Briefly, thank you, Madam Mayor. So two motions were passed at the general meeting of electors held on the 17th of March. The first was that the town changed the method of electing the mayor from election by council to election by the electors. And the second was that the town revert to a ward-based council system, and it is recommended that council does not seek to implement either motion for the reasons that are outlined in the report.
Any questions, councillors? Okay. Item 7.8, it's the code of conduct for council members, committee members and candidates. So again, Mr. White, your item.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. It's briefly again. The Local Government Model Code of Conduct Regulations introduced a mandatory code of conduct. We've had some discussions about this before. The Model Code replaces the Rules of Conduct Regulations, Local Government Rules of Conduct Regulations. The new regulations were introduced on the 3rd of February, and all local governments have 3 months from that date to prepare and adopt a code that incorporates the Model Code. The recommended approach is for the town to adopt the model code with the intention that it be reviewed in 12 months' time.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, so moving on to item 7.9, it's the implementation of differential rates. And just before Mr. White speaks on this one, I just want to thank you for all of the work that you've done behind the scenes responding to councillors' requests and potential options that we might have. I know it's been a lot of work for you, so thank you very much for your efforts.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. This paper follows the provision of a report to councillors that included differential rating models and a comparison of regimes in other metropolitan local governments. We've had two workshops with council, and the proposal in this report arose from the most recent workshop held last week. The recommendation is for council to adopt differential rates based on the following three criteria for the purposes of advertising. And those criteria are an increase in the rate in the dollar from 2020-21 of 2%, a premium of 50% for vacant residential, commercial and industrial land, and a cap on the minimum payment to that levy in 2019-20, which is also our current minimum of $1,106. And should council resolve to adopt the above, the town will give local public notice at the earliest opportunity in May and invite submissions and allow 21 days for at least 21 days for responses. The town will also write to all affected property owners. Council must also publish its objects and reasons for differential rates. And the proposed statement of objects and reasons is attached to the report. And a further report will be prepared for council following the closing date for receipt of submissions. Council must consider any submissions received and may adopt the proposed differential rates with or without amendment.
Thank you for that. Can I just clarify, when you say with or without amendment, I understand amendment, there's potential to reduce, not to increase at that stage, is that
The term amendment is the term that's used in the Act, and I think the intent is that it not significantly depart from what has been advertised. It's more about the differential components than the rates. So I don't believe that it necessarily would require perhaps a reduction or a 2% general rate increase or less. There may be scope to increase, but there's not scope to change the differential rating categories.
Thank you. Questions? Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Your Worship. So we've discussed the idea of differential rates for a number of years now.
And since the week after Mr. White arrived, I think.
And there's a couple of moving parts to all of this, but the bit that I seek to understand is the necessity to factor in an increase to the rate in the dollar at this stage. Is it a legislative requirement that we factor in the increase to the rate of the dollar prior to the advertising stage?
No, through you, Madam Mayor, no, it's not. The intent there is to give the community visibility on what the full effect of the proposed differential rating regime might look like and might mean for them.
So what it might look like in the circumstances where Council approves a 2% increase to the rate base as a part of the budget process?
Through you, Madam Mayor, yes, that's correct. And on the basis that it is likely, given the town's financial position that we've discussed fairly recently, that in the absence of differential rates as part of the budget process, some increase of that magnitude at least would be required to make up the budget deficiency.
Okay, so picking up on your earlier comments, if we are to advertise on this basis, there's nothing to prevent us if we work out that there are savings in the future to put in a lower amount, as long as we keep the structure of the differential rates the same, that would be covered?
Through you, Madam Mayor, yes, that's correct.
Did I see other questions? No, you obviously did a good job at the workshop, thank you. Item 710, monthly financial report for March. Any comments that you need to make?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. No, not specifically. It's a standard monthly financial report. The following item is a standard list of accounts paid for the month of March.
Any questions relating to either of those items? No? Okay. So, So we'll go on to item 8, which is notices of motion. So there were 3 notices of motion submitted by councillors. Would you want to speak to that at all?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just probably in relation...
They're not in there.
So there was I believe there was an email sent by the CEO during the week to advise that the notices of motion would be in the briefing papers and would be subject to further consideration before coming direct to the ordinary council meeting.
I understand there's further information being sought to provide councillors with adequate background, please, is that correct?
Through you, Madam, that's correct. My understanding is that there has been some ongoing communication in relation to the notices of motion with the CEO, and that further information is being sought in relation to some of the more recent comments that have been made.
Right, thank you. All right then, so we'll move on to confidential business. So thank you for being here, but you are now welcome to go home and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you.